The question was asked, what is the purpose of all the other prohibitions of Yom Kippur? We know there are five things prohibited on Yom Kippur. It's prohibited to eat and drink. It's prohibited to be intimate with one's wife. It's prohibited to wash oneself for pleasure. It's prohibited to anoint oneself. And it is prohibited to wear leather shoes. So all five come under the category of inui. There is a machlokas rishonim, whether all five are biblical or not. We assume they are, but that's not so obvious. It happens to be machlokas rishonim, as we find. The rabbis gave certain leniencies with regards to washing for a bride and for a king. So that certainly seems to indicate that they are not biblical. But at any rate, eating and drinking is for sure biblical, not being intimate, and we assume all five are biblical. So the Torah wanted us to do inui nefesh, to afflict our souls, to take a day in which we take back, where we do not indulge, we do not do things that are really taking care of our physical needs. Now, obviously, that involves a certain discomfort. Not eating or drinking is uncomfortable. Not showering is uncomfortable often. Not washing ourselves, our hands, or the other basic things that we don't do on Yom Kippur is uncomfortable. But the idea, it seems, is that a person separates from the material needs and desires that he pursues all year long and makes himself similar to an angel, as we find in the Medrash, that when Satan comes before Hashem on Yom Kippur, Hashem asks him, what do you have to say about this world of mine? And he says, well, there's one unique people there down there who dress in white like angels, and they don't bend their knees like angels. They're like standing straight and erect throughout most of their prayer like angels, and they're united like angels. That's why before Yom Kippur, we have a custom to ask one another for forgiveness and make up with people and have peace, because part of what's supposed to happen in heaven is that Satan, the angel who's supposed to be our prosecutor, comes up and says, those people are like angels even in their unity, and they don't eat and drink like angels, and they don't need to wear shoes like angels. So part of our affliction, part of what we're doing on Yom Kippur, is we're elevating ourselves. And as we discussed earlier tonight, those who unfortunately for health reasons cannot fast on Yom Kippur have a much harder time connecting to Yom Kippur. Part of the elevation a person gets is that he really does control himself. I'm subscribed to a beautiful website called shalombias911.org or .com. You guys are invited to subscribe. I've been subscribed for a number of months. And just today, I got a fantastic email from the guy. He doesn't tell you who he is, Mordechai. He's a marriage therapist. And he sends you an email every day from Baltimore, Mordechai from Baltimore. And today he sent me an email about sincerity, about the importance of sincerity in marriage and relationships. And he encouraged me to click on a link, which I don't usually do, but after a few months I trust him. And I clicked on the link, and it was a YouTube video from over 30, almost 40 years ago. And the YouTube video was about Mr. Rogers talking before the Senate. You guys heard of Mr. Rogers?
PBS.
What?
I've seen this video.
He's PBS.
Okay.
A kid's
PBS,
show.
Right. Yeah. So, public broadcasting station had just come out, and they needed the funding that Dwight D. Eisenhower had given them. And Nixon, in his budget cuts, wanted to cut $20 million from public broadcasting service, from PBS, and that would cut the program of Mr. Rogers. And Mr. Rogers was to face a Senate committee where the head of the committee was a really nasty guy, as he says about himself, whose intent was to cut the programming. And Mr. Rogers was allowed to talk before him. Now, he said a few brilliant things over there. The first thing he said is, I have here a philosophical work I would like you to read, but it's going to take 10 minutes, and I don't want to read it. He said, the first thing we teach children in our relationship with them is trust. And so I'm going to trust what you've said. Trust is so important. I'm going to trust what you've said that you're going to read this piece. Notice how he's giving a guilt trip to the senator without even saying it. But he says, I'm not going to read it right now. I'm going to trust you that you're going to read what I've written here. And he puts the pages aside. And then he says, I want you to understand what we're trying to teach children in the program. And he speaks about the different educational goals he has, but he ends with a phenomenal point. He ends and says that he composed the song for children about what do I do when, I don't remember the wording exactly, something to the effect of something when angriness happens to me. He said he's quoting a child who asked him that question. What do I do when angriness happens to me? And he says to the senator, he says, what we're trying to teach children is that phenomenal feeling that a human being gets when they have self-control. When suddenly their emotions don't control them, but rather they control, they're in charge of what's happening in their life. And he sings to the senator the song. What do I do when angriness happens to me? Do I hit my sister? Do I tear a page? Do I, just a second, do I stop and think about what I should do and then decide whether I'll go outside and run, whether I'll draw a picture? And he describes in the song how a person can choose to channel their emotions. But what's beautiful is his introduction, where he says, what I'm trying to teach children is that amazing feeling a person gets when they're in control of their feelings. One of the amazing things the Torah gives us is that capacity to control. The holiest day of the year is the day where we exhibit the greatest control, the greatest self-control. Couples separate. They don't touch. They separate their beds. They leave a light on in their bedroom. They shouldn't happen to forget to be intimate that night. They leave a light on as a sign to remind them. We don't eat. We don't drink. We don't wear the leather shoes. Think about the self-control we have. And we take it for granted. A businessman told me he sat for a meeting with another businessman. He's Jewish, and the other guy is Christian. So the other guy sits down and orders pork. And this guy orders a cup of tea. And the guy looks at him and says, I understand you're Jewish, but isn't it hard for you to sit there watching me eating this delicious meat? And the Jew looks back at him. Now, he's without a yarmulke at the meeting. I'm telling you the way he told me the meeting went. And he says, no. And the guy says, how come you could smell my meat and not be salivating? And he tells him, look, we are trained numerous times throughout the year. We fast. That means we can look at food and say, I'm not eating that for the next 12 or 24 hours. The self-control we have from the time we're 13 is that we know there are foods we cannot eat. There are times we cannot eat. If we've eaten meat, we'll wait 6 hours till we eat milk. So we are accustomed to self-control. That habit of self-control makes it so much easier for us when we're faced with life's challenges. So you asked me about Yom Kippur. I don't think Yom Kippur is difficult in that sense. Oh, when a person is new to it, so it's a little bit hard. Why am I not wearing shoes? Why am I not eating? Why am I not drinking? Why can't I wash my hands? But if we stop and take a step back and we remember that true happiness and true feelings of self-worth and self-accomplishment come from self-control, from the ability to say, there's something more worthwhile to me than achieving the here and now. There's something more important to me than running after what I desire right now. I know there's a foreign concept to our generation. How many people talk to you and take out their iPhone and look at it as they're talking to you? It's become a norm that the impulse overrides etiquette. It's so crazy. It's so disturbing that we're a generation where it's become normal that my current impulse overrides you. I walk away from a conversation when someone does that. Because to my mind, you want to talk on your phone, that's fine, but I'm not talking to you. But most of the world thinks it's normal. Along comes Yom Kippur, the holiest day, and a Jew stands up and says, I'm in control. That's part of holiness, but that's also part of self-fulfillment. It's not only serving Hashem, it's also the greatest service we do for ourselves. And that's where I go back to Mr. Rogers. What Mr. Rogers said that won over the senator was, I'm trying to give this tool to children, that amazing feeling that I can control my anger. My anger doesn't control me. When we can have self-control, we can have satisfaction with life. And it runs hand in hand. There's also a wonderful book Stephen Covey wrote, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. He just passed away a year ago, Stephen Covey. I highly recommend the book. So that's one of the things he writes there. Now, he doesn't reveal in the book what religion he is. Just after he passed away, I read someone sent me a biography of him, and I discovered he was Christian. But it doesn't matter. The book has excellent principles, and even as a non-Jew, he stresses this point, that when we can have self-control, that's when we can start having satisfaction with life. So Yom Kippur is a beautiful day, even from a secular perspective, saying this idea that I control. I am not my desires don't control me, I control them. And it's a beautiful way to start the year. So we don't know why the Torah gave us these mitzvos. The first thing we discussed was the idea that we're supposed to be like angels. The second thing we discussed was self-control. And the final thing is that we don't really know. We have a mitzvah. Hashem says, do this, we do it. But there are many beautiful concepts that we can perceive within the mitzvah. Why Hashem said it, I don't know. But I can definitely perceive these concepts and say, wow, that's beautiful.